The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome back. This is David and Isaac, Hoop Ball Grizz, back with another episode. Coming back, the Grizzlies fall short. Game two, Donovan Mitchell makes, I'm going to semi-comeback. I don't care what he says. He is not healthy. He didn't play awful, but he looked pretty ginger out there on that ankle. 141-129 was the final score. We're going to talk about the game, talk about game three coming back to the grindhouse. The Grizzlies getting some national media attention. Ja Morant blowing up the most points scored in their first two playoff games by a player. I guess just first two. I don't think there was an age involved in that, was there? Like at 73?
Yeah, I think since the merger,
the only guy that scored more than him was George Mikan, and that was prior to the merger.
Yeah, so I mean, just unbelievable stuff for Ja. Like I said, man, records falling by the game. I mean, it's at this point, man. I mean, you can't say it's unbelievable anymore because I mean, you expect these things from him. I mean, he's been so special through his first 2 years, and again, I mean, it's just getting started, man. What is he going to be doing 3 or 4 years from now, man? It's amazing. But, yeah, I mean, I agree with you on Donovan Mitchell. I mean, he did have a good game, but you could tell that he's not 100%, and that's going to be something to watch going forward. I definitely think that could be an issue because, I mean, he looked ginger on that ankle. I mean, he went back to the locker room at one point during the game, did come back out. But I don't think he's going to be 100% in this series. But, yeah, man, still played really well, man. Knocked down some tough shots, so he's definitely going to make a difference for this team, and it's definitely an adjustment that the Grizzlies are going to have to make.
Yeah, he was 5 for 10 from three, so, you know, you can tell that he's not 100%, but it didn't affect his ability to score the basketball, that's for sure. Played 25 minutes, scored 25 points. Man, the Jazz pick and roll just tore the Grizzlies apart.
Yeah.
It was just... the Grizzlies did not have an answer for it.
And we've seen that throughout the year. I mean, that's been a big problem for this team throughout the year. They did a really good job of it in game one, but in game two, I mean, they just couldn't defend the pick and roll. I mean, they really took advantage of that all night long. I mean, you see JV and Jaren just getting killed all night with the pick and roll. And I don't know if they have an answer to that. We kind of talked about that on Twitter with me and you and a couple other people on Twitter this morning. I don't know if they have an answer for that. Personnel-wise, they just might not have an answer. I think, and don't put me in the box of Bass and Jaren, because I'm definitely not in that box. I disagree wholeheartedly with this narrative of Jaren's not a part of this future, that he is regressed and all that. I mean, the guy's been out for almost a year. Man. Yeah, hadn't even played 20 games, and we're in the middle of a playoff series, man. This guy is 22 years old, man. Come on, man. Just give a break, man, to what's going on right now with Jaren. I mean, you got to understand there's going to be some rust with Jaren. And again, I mean, it is what it is right now. But I think the minutes with Jaren at the five, I just don't think you can play him at the five. And I mean, I know you have Tillman and you look at the size of Gobert, and I mean, he's given up a lot of height there, but I think when JV's out of the game, Tillman might be your best option. I mean, I think you just have to kind of roll with what you have there. And I think that might be the best option. I know. So I was talking to someone a minute ago and they were saying, well, maybe you should go back to BC. And I do think that there might be some shakeup off the bench. And we'll talk about that a little bit, but BC's not going to help with the rebounding. I mean, he might help a little bit with the pick-and-roll defense, but again, he's giving up a lot of size as well. So I think strength-wise, if you're going to have an undersized guy, I think Tillman might be your best option. I think that just might have to be the way they go.
Yeah, it's almost a catch-22 there between Tillman and BC. And, you know, we've been saying on the show for a little while that we like Tillman over BC, and that's not a slight saying that we don't like Brandon Clark, because that's not the case. But at this point in time, Tillman has been playing better. But it's the playoffs. You have to make adjustments, and that may be what they have to do. Who knows? You know, if you put him out there and he's out there and he plays, you know, between 5 to 8 minutes and BC is getting torched or looks worse, okay, it didn't work. You just don't put him back out there. I don't know where they're going to go with the adjustments. They're not getting much productivity from the bench. And that's in the playoffs, you don't see that as much as the regular season. So that's to be expected a little bit. But this Grizzlies team has been so successful because those guys have been so good. And just kind of crazy because Melton has been good all year. And these last, probably 3 or 4 weeks, he looked like Bubble DeAnthony Melton all over again. Can't throw a rock in the ocean. You know, just Desmond Bain has really been the only guy off the bench that has been reliable and doing what you need him to do. So we'll see how that goes moving forward. But I want to touch on the Jaren stuff. Go back and look at some of these players in their second and third season. Look at what Giannis was doing in his second and third season and James Harden. Look what these guys were doing season two and three, and then look where they're at now. A lot of these guys are not hitting their peak. You know, I don't know where this narrative comes from. I don't know where it was generated, but a player's not going to come in the NBA more times than not going to come in the NBA and be at their peak by their second season. And it's crazy to me that people are thinking that. I see so many fans with bad takes on get Jaren out of there. He's hurting the team. You know, he's not bringing anything to the table. He had 18 points. He didn't rebounding. I don't want to hear about the rebound. He's not a rebounder. I don't care about that. I don't care that he's 7 foot and he doesn't rebound well. That doesn't bother me at all. That's not what he's there for. He's 9 of 11 from the free throw line. He was productive. His plus minus, he was a plus three, you know, in a game that they lost, four out of the five starters were positives. And Jaren was one of those guys. So don't tell me he wasn't bringing anything to the floor. His pick and roll defense was not good. It didn't look good there. And there were some things that he was doing that didn't look good, but give this guy time. His skill set is too good to just be rolling over on him already. I've never seen a fan base do this so fast on, no, this guy's garbage. Just get him out of town. Here we are now, you know, beginning of the season, it was Dylan Brooks. We're trading him for freaking Cheetos and a Pepsi. And now it's the same thing with Jaren Jackson. And I don't understand it, man. I will never be on that page. I'm not telling you that I will never get frustrated and never, you know, be critical of him, because there's definitely things that you can be critical about, but it's tiring. I cannot understand where this is coming from. And I wish I knew who started this whole, they have to be good by year two, or are there a bust, because that needs to be just shot. Just get it out of here. Done. Give these guys time to develop.
I think with Jaren, I think it's the what have you done for me lately syndrome with people. I think they've forgotten how good he was last year and being out for most of the season and then coming back. You're thinking that this is what he was, and it's not. I mean, and even now, even with him struggling, just like you said, I mean, he had 16 points. He played, had a good game, 1 of 2 from three, 9 of 11 from the free throw line, like I said, plus three in the game. I mean, even with him struggling, he still, production-wise, has been one of the better players on the team. And, I mean, pick-and-roll defense was bad, and I think that's an issue going forward. And I do think one of my keys to this series going forward is I talked about this a lot, and I've asked for this ever since game one. I just think right now his three-point shot's not falling. I mean, it has been really falling since he's come back from injury. And when you look at this, the matchups between outside of Ja, in theory, I think Jaren – it's the biggest advantage that the Grizzlies have against the Jazz with the guys, Royce O'Neal, Bogdanovich, whoever they put on him, Niang, whoever they have on him at the time. I think streak-wise, I think he has an advantage. And I think every time he shoots from the perimeter, I think he's belting him out, man. Go inside and try to exploit that mismatch. I mean, this team doesn't really have – the Grizzlies don't really have many advantages against this Jazz team. But if in theory, if they have one or two, that would be one of them. And I just think that they're not – exploiting that enough. I mean, we've seen a couple times where he's going to the basket, and usually he scores or he ends up getting to the free throw line. And yeah, I just like to see that a little bit more.
Yeah, he had 11 free throw attempts in game two, and the majority of those came off of his inside game.
Yeah.
So while he does like to shoot the three, and I have no problems with him shooting the three, he only shot two threes.
Yeah, he only shot two threes in game two.
I thought it was more than that, but that's his success came from inside. Excuse me. I apologize. I just hadn't shaken this cold yet. I was talking to my wife just fine. I get on here and start recording, and here it comes, and I'm all phlegmy and everything. But I pulled Giannis's stats up here. Giannis, year one and two, he was 6 points, then 13 points, then 17 points. And then between year three and four, he goes from 17 and seven to 24 and nine. Year four. This is year three for Jaren, basically like with his injury time and time missed, essentially like year two. But year three, if we are at the end of next season and Jaren is not being productive and he's not, and you want to badmouth him, then I may listen to it a little bit more, but give these guys time. Don't roll over on them so fast. The playoffs are a different animal. When you get into regular season games, and this year was a little different because they played a lot of these teams close. Like I think all three of the Jazz games were within like 8 or 9 days of each other. So it was kind of like a series with the Jazz, but you have to make adjustments. This is not a regular season game. And so there's going to be things that we see. They're just completely different. And I've got to say, I've been pleasantly surprised with the things that Jenkins is doing in this series. For all of the worry and all of the concerns that we've had with him and adjustments, I think that he's done fantastic with it.
Yeah, I think he's done a great job. Because I was one of the ones that have criticized him throughout the season for not making adjustments. But here late in the season, even back to the play-in, you got to look at that Portland game. San Antonio game at FedEx Forum in that second half where he made some adjustments. You had Grayson really struggling there in the first half, and he set him down in the second half. We talked about that on here. And, I mean, with the lineups, the way he staggered lineups, I kind of asked for that. He's done that very well. I think he's done a fantastic job for this to be his first playoff run. I mean, you got to understand that he's a young coach. This team is young, and they're learning on the fly here, and I think they're doing a fantastic job. Going into these first two games, I think if you're the Grizzlies, for me at least, I want to accomplish two things. I think you obviously want to get the split. Anytime you don't have home court advantage, you want to try to take that home court advantage away. By winning those first two games, they did that. But secondary, I think what they wanted to prove to the Jazz that they weren't going to punk them, that this wasn't going to be we're the one, we're the eight, you're a young team, we're superior to you, we're just going to show up and beat you. And I think they passed that test emphatically. I think the Jazz know at this point this is going to be a dogfight and this could be a long series. I think going in, I think you kind of look at the Donovan Mitchell stuff and them sitting them game one. I think they kind of thought, oh, we're this team. We're going to just roll this team. This is going to be a sweep. This is not going to be any problem. And I think the Grizzlies have shown them that that's not going to be the case. And I think they've given them something to think about. And these are going to be tough games and they're going to play well to win. Because, I mean, even if you look at game two, I mean, they end up winning the game by 12. I think you saw the big comeback by the Grizzlies. If it wasn't for foul trouble in that game early from DB and JV, I think this could have been a different game. I mean, the Grizzlies were still in this game, and I think the Jazz probably played as well as they were playing this series. I mean, they had 19 threes. You're probably not going to play much better than that, and the Grizzlies still got it down to a single-possession game there and were really in this game until a run there late. So I think this Jazz team knows that this Grizz team is not scared of them. They're not going to push this team around. And I think it's going to be a really big time fight when it gets back to 191 Bill. And I'm excited about these two games. And I think the Grizzlies have an opportunity to win these two games. I really do. I feel better about this series now than I felt going into game one.
Yeah. And I'm on the same page as you. I said before the series, I thought the Grizzlies would find a way to win a couple games. I didn't think they had a shot in this series. And then after seeing game two, even though game two was a loss, I have confidence that the Grizzlies can beat this team. Donovan Mitchell, like I said, he's not 100%. He said that he was ready to go, but it's clear that he's not. If he's not out there, And even with him out there, the Grizzlies were down 22, got it back to within 3 points.
Yeah.
They've shown the fight. They're not going to lay down. There's too much competitiveness coming from Dylan and Ja and Kyle and JV and Jaren. Like, all of these guys want to win. And my favorite basketball moment, maybe freaking ever, is when Desmond Bain hit that three.
And oh,
just stared him down and was just smiling and nodding his head. Like, I can't even tell you how happy that was. Game one, wasn't it? That was
So at the end of third quarter.
So, you know, like, this series has already brought a lot of great moments for the Grizzlies, but I've gained confidence even in this loss because of the fight that they showed to claw back into this game and get it into a one possession game. Then the Jazz went on the run. They closed the door. The pick-and-roll defense kind of fell apart. Gobert got a couple dunks. Gobert is a monster. I hate him. I can't stand him. He's a freaking flopper. For a guy that's like 7 foot, 280, he flops around like he's 5 foot nothing and 110 pounds, and it drives me insane. But do not discredit what this man can do defensively. And that's I saw a lot of that. I saw a lot of, you know, well – you know, he's not, excuse me, dang, you know, he's not having success. Well, Rudy Gobert has won Defensive Player of the Year twice for a freaking reason. It's because he's really, really good.
Yeah, he's wrecked your offense, man.
And so, you know, if you don't watch a lot of Jazz games, you don't see what he's capable of. He really alters anything inside, around the paint, around the basket. When he's down there, he makes people alter their shots. He makes teams game plan around his defensive abilities for a reason. But even outside of that, the Grizzlies still have a shot. And it's, you know, on First Take, they were talking about it. And Perkins was, he said, if you've never been to Memphis and played in there and you felt the energy, and he didn't know, he was trying to think of whoop that trick, and he was stumbling all over the place. He's like, you know, they get in there and he's like, whoop that in. And I don't even remember what he said.
He's like, whatever that song is.
So, you know, he was talking about the energy that the fans bring. And he said, if you've never been there, I don't think that you fully understand it. And, you know, these role players are going to feed off of that energy. So it's definitely a series. I would love it if the Grizzlies managed to win both of these games at home. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think that they do legitimately have a shot to win both of these games.
Yeah, and I said it on Twitter earlier. I think they definitely have a shot. It's going to be tough, but I definitely think they're capable. And you kind of talk about the role players, and that's kind of one of my keys. That I think the bench has to be better. I mean, in game two, they got outscored 43-14. Like you said, Desmond Bane has really been the only guy that's really produced off the bench. And is it time to shake things up a little bit? I mean, I wouldn't mind. I'm usually not a guy that would – make adjustments at this point. I'm kind of a dance with the girl that you brought to the dance type of guy. But when you're struggling like this, I mean, I think there are options there. I mean, do you deploy Justice Winslow as a defensive mercenary? I think there are points where he could get some minutes out there against guys like Bogdanovich and whatever. You don't need him offensively, but I think you could steal some minutes with him defensively. Could you bring BC back into the fold? I think there are opportunities to bring some guys back in, but I think these other guys have to be better. I mean, you have to get more from Grayson. I mean, he's been bad in this series.
He's been bad. You know, he had a couple. He knocked down a couple big threes, game one. But when he's playing like he did in game two, when he's not knocking down the shot,
I mean, he's unplayable.
Justice Winslow, man.
Yeah.
Because defensively, if Grayson Allen is shooting the ball the way that he was shooting in game two,
I take
Justice Winslow, because Justice Winslow would be, you know, he's been bad offensively, but
you know what he's going to give you defensively.
He's significantly better on the defensive end. And I think that, you know, his skill set and what he can do, he showed it at times of getting to the basket, and the matchup that he would have, I think that he would be a plus. Again, it's a tough time. And if Jenkins makes a huge change like that and it doesn't work out, he's going to get a lot of heat. But when it comes to playoff series, sometimes you've got to swing for the fences. You have to take a chance that you may not normally take. in order to make those adjustments to get the win. We'll see what happens. I think that we see BC in game three. I really do. Whenever it comes to the pick and roll defense, maybe he surprises us, but after watching the film, they've got some days off here. They travel. They're going to be watching film and studying it. If he really sits down and looks at those minutes with Jaren at the five, there's no way that he can be happy with them. There's just no way.
It's rough, man.
Again, it's not a let's hate on Jaren. That's not what it is. Jaren, although he's 7 foot, he is not a center. And that's okay. You know that. You learn that. Maybe, you know, as he adds muscle, that can change. But right now, he's not there. And so you have to do something to make some form or fashion of an adjustment to see if you can remedy that. Because if you don't, and you play that pick and roll defense the same way they did in game two, the Grizzlies are going to get rolled. They cannot play the pick and roll defense the same in game three as they did in game two, or the Jazz are going to come into Memphis and steamroll.
Yeah, I mean, they have to find – I mean, I don't know if there's a complete answer for it, but it has to be better than it was in game two. And we talked about this earlier. I don't know if that's to give up the floaters in the lane to try to stop some of the three-point shooting. I mean, the Jazz are going to hit threes, but you can't let them – you can't get outscored – can't let them hit 19 threes and get outscored by 33 points from the three-point line. And you're not going to win games like that. This is not a recipe for success. So they have to be better. They did a pretty good job of defending the pick and roll in game one, but it just fell apart there, especially late in that game when they went on that run to kind of pull away and put it away. But that's something that they have to figure out. And, I mean, maybe they don't have an answer for it, but I think you could try different things. And I think it's shown that the Jaren at the five thing is not going to work. And, again, that's not – that's Jaren. Very early on in Jaren's rookie year, I thought that he would mature into a five. Now I don't really feel that way anymore. I think he's a four. And especially in this series, going up against Gobert and a guy of his size, you really can't play him there. So I think they got to find an answer to that. And I think BC gets a minutes there. But you, in the, like you said, in the playoff series, if something's not working, man, you have to try whatever you can try. I mean, there's a reason why the Jazz are the number one seed and the Grizzlies are eight. I mean, the Jazz are really – good team, and they're going to cause problems for pretty much anybody. So, there might not be an answer for it, but I think you have to maximize what you have. And I think there's a couple other things that Jenkins can try. And I think we're going to see that going forward. Cause again, the Jaren thing just in the pick and roll is just not working. And I hate to keep passing, saying bad things about Jaren, not really bashing him. It just is what it is.
Yeah. And you know, like the drop defense from JV was driving us crazy because of the game against Indiana when LeVert had like 40 or 80, you know, what seemed like 100 points with the mid-range jumpers. It was driving us nuts, but you got to give those up, man. To me, go back to playing the drop. They made adjustments. They were playing it differently a little bit. The dunks from Gobert are not going to be misses. Those are high percentage shots that you don't want to live with. If Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley shoot 70% from the mid range and tear you up, you just gotta live with it. You know, you can't go under the screen and give them the three. This team shoots the three too well to do that. And you can't just let Gobert roll to the basket and dunk it every time either. It's gotta find it, man. Gotta find it. I don't know for sure what that answer is. I think the drop would definitely make a difference in that. It would eliminate the dunks, but you know what you give up from that. I'd say definitely the mid range, the floaters, the mid range jumpers are going to be a lot lower percentage than what a dunk are. You know, analytically, giving up the wide open three looks. There's so many positive things. You know, we've kind of hit on a lot of the negative in this game. But Ja Morant franchise record 47 points. That's not just playoffs. That was Mike Miller had the previous team high of 45.
Yeah, I think it was a regular season game against the Nuggets. I was at that game. I remember that.
I thought that Ja was going to hit the 50, man. I really did.
He tried, man. He put up that three there at the end. I was like, I wonder, was he aware that he had 47? And he let me know that he was aware. He came down and pulled up that full for the three. And I think DB ended up hitting a three off the offensive rebound. I was like, man, I wish Ja could have put that down to get a 50 piece, but
just unbelievable. I was going to ask Quinn Snyder a question about Ja in the press conference before the last game, and I'm definitely going to ask him if they call on me. I'm definitely going to ask him before game three. I just want to see what his opinion on. I think that, you know, I'm going to have a pretty good idea of what he's going to say, but the Jazz don't have an answer for him. They have not been able to stop him, and that's good for the Grizzlies. The game started off, the first half was pretty much Ja carrying the load. And then in the second half, you know, Kyle got into double digits, Jaren 16, JV had 18, Dylan Brooks scored 23, and then Bane only had 5 off the bench. It looks like Bane and Melton 5 and 7. So 14 points total off of the bench. And just not going to cut it for them. But it's, man, I like you say, you can't even say unbelievable anymore, but it's incredible to see Ja at this early in his career, what he's doing. And against, you know, he's going in, he's hitting the floaters, he's trying to dunk against one of the best defensive players in the league and arguably one of the best defensive players ever in Rudy Gobert. When Gobert blocked his dunk, you know, Ja's like, "Don't worry, I'll be back," or something of that nature.
That's what he said.
And then
he
went right back at him later in the game, and Gobert didn't even jump with him. And I think, I wish he would have, because that would have been a poster. He was Jive, you know, he got up quick, and Gobert was not in a position where he would have blocked that one. I think that would have been pretty ugly on his part if he would have tried. But this crazy stuff, Ja, Dylan Brooks has been insanely efficient lately, making that contract, you know, he just making Kleiman look like a freaking genius. Like, oh, we just signed this dude to arguably the best contract in the history of the franchise at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been on another level. And maybe he's one of those guys where, and he's talked about this, that his mentality and his game fits the playoff format more. I mean, he's the confidence that he's bringing. That's one thing that I've been really impressed by with this team, because a lot of teams in their position, the Jazz, a young team, the Jazz would punk them. I mean, they'd be scared of this team, but this team is not at all. The confidence and the swagger that the Grizzlies have shown has really been impressive to me, and that's one of the reasons why I believe that they have a chance in the series. I still don't know if they'll win it, but I think they believe they can win it, and that's half of the battle right there. And to go back to Ja, I mean, I think he's figured out right now that they just don't have an answer for him, and he was talking about how he was able to get to his spots on the floor and just that entire just second half. I mean, he was just doing whatever he wanted to do. I mean, they just couldn't stop him. He was just getting in lane. Every time he got in lane, I felt like he was going to score. And then he got – what did he do from the free throw line? I mean, I don't even have it here. Ja, 15 to 20. 20 free throws. Yeah, I mean, that's big time. I mean, you can get your point guard, get in the lane, and get to the free throw line, 20 attempts. He was struggling early, but really came on and started knocking him down. I think he was 1 of 4 at one point and finished 15 to 20. So he did a fantastic statistical job there. But, I mean, it's – score 47 points. I mean, that's something that guys at his age just aren't doing. And I think he knows, again, I don't think they have any answer for him. So I think that's something that's going to translate game to game. Now, will he score 47 points every game? No, but I think he can score 25 every game against this team. And when, I mean, if you have that from him and you get what you're getting from Brooks, if they can limit some of the three-point shooting, again, the Jazz are going to make threes. But again, you can't let all their perimeter guys go off. And that's kind of what happened in game two and what didn't happen in game one. I mean, I think you need to see more of what happened in game one. And I think the Grizzlies will be fine. I mean, you know, road players usually struggle a little bit more than they do at home on the road. So a lot of those shots probably aren't going to fall the way they were falling in game two. At least you hope not at FedEx Forum. And if they can limit that, I think that's a big thing. I mean, losing from three by 33 points, I mean, you're just not going to win a game like that. And even despite that, they only lost this game by 12. And again, got it down to 3-1 at one point in the second half. I think that has to give you confidence, because, I mean, this Jazz team, that's probably about, again, I said earlier, about as well as they can play. And the Grizz were still in that game, and that was on the road in a game where the Jazz had to win to stop from going down 2-0. So I feel good going into these two games at FedEx Forum.
Yeah. Yep, I agree with you, man. I don't know exactly what it's going to take. I do know that fixing that, the pick and roll defense, we've talked about that's got to get better, and just executing. And that's something Ja was asked, and pretty much everybody was asked about Ja in the game and his performance, and he wasn't happy with it. He's like, you know, it's an honor to be able to do that, but we didn't win, so it was not enough.
And I love that.
He just, his mindset, the way that he approaches everything, his work ethic, just great for this franchise, man. And it makes it fun to cover him because, you know, like when he's out there on the floor, you know, he's going to be confident and he's going to, you know, like the trash talk back and forth. Like you see that from him, but you know, when it comes down to it, everything that he does is win. Like that's his, you know, if he scores 8 points and they win, okay, yeah, I didn't play well, we got the win. I'm sure that he'd rather average 8 points a game and win this series than drop 50 every game and lose.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen in games this year where he didn't have really, really great games and they won. And in the post-game press conference, he was happy. I mean, happy for his teammates. He builds his other teammates up. He supports them. And that's what you want from your leader. I mean, even we go back to that press conference, I think before, I can't remember if it was before or after game one, where I think it was after the win against Golden State, where he said, man, shout out, give our dog DB some credit for on these all defensive teams. And you love that, to have a guy that is not so much worried about his stats. He wants his teammates to do well, and he wants to win. And it doesn't matter what his numbers are. I really believe that he would be happy if he never scored another point in this game, but the Grizzlies won the series. I think he'd be genuinely happy with that. And that's what you want. I mean, he said he scored 47 points, and he said it wasn't enough because we didn't win the game. And he may come as like that throughout the year, and I don't think it's just talk. I think he genuinely feels that way, and that's what you want from your leader. And I mean, there's not even words that you can say how lucky we are to be able to watch him and cover him here in Memphis. I mean, he's just so great for this franchise in the city. The attitude that he has, his work ethic, everything that he brings to the game is just fantastic, and that's not even mentioning the otherworldly talent that he has.
Yeah. Another guy we hadn't talked a whole lot about in this series, but Kyle Anderson, 10 steals in the two games. The one thing, and that's great, obviously, you know, doing that on the defensive end, just locked in, being in the right spot at the right time, playing the passing lanes well, you know, poking the ball out, doing all of that right. The most important thing that I saw from Kyle, when they were down 22 and they were fighting to come back, and there was a foul, he would be at the free throw line getting them together. And you could see, like, he was taking on – Kyle was taking that leadership role to keep them on the same page. I can't believe that I was like, just trade Kyle. And it wasn't because I didn't like him. But now I see what he's bringing to the team, and I'm like, man, what were you thinking? Like, why would you want to get rid of that? We've said it before, the Grizzlies would definitely not be in this spot without him.
Not at all.
Not that he is, you know, the cornerstone of the franchise, but he's been a massive part of the season. And just, it was great to me to see him, you know, like, pull, hey, huddle up, get in here, and you know, just talking to the guys, trying to rally them. And I think that, you know, just those few times when you saw him doing that is one of the things that kept them from, not that these guys would give up in the playoffs, that's not going to happen, but like he was keeping the spirits up. Like that was driving the energy right there. And that was huge.
Yeah. I mean, I was always pro Kyle and pro keeping him here when people were talking about trading him. But even as a Kyle truther, I never expected what we saw from him this season. I mean, that when Ja went down with the ankle injury earlier in the season, I mean, whoever thought you'd be saying Kyle put a team on his back, but he did exactly that. I mean, he was absolutely phenomenal during that time that Ja was out, and he's been really good all season. I mean, offensively, he's not what he was then, but I mean, he's been fantastic. I mean, the intangible things that he brings to the floor, and you talk about that, about how he was hauling guys up and talking. What is he, 26 years old? That's a veteran on this team, and he is. Been a leader for this team. I mean, even in press conference, I love talking to guys. I mean, you can just tell by the way that he interacts with the media and things, the way he talks about the game, that he's a leader in that locker room. And I mean, he's been phenomenal for this team. And I think probably even the front office was probably thinking, well, he's not a long-term piece for this team, but maybe I think he might have changed the mind a little bit on that. And I think his contract, when you look back at it, a lot of people scoffed at how much they gave him when he first signed that contract. And I think now that's a phenomenal deal, kind of similar in the vein of what DB's is. I think he's earned every bit of that contract. And this team would not be in playoffs right now, I don't think, if it wasn't for Kyle Anderson and his contributions this year, probably on and off the floor.
Yeah. Man, I don't have much of anything else. I think we've kind of covered what we think they need to do. You were talking about your keys of the game on Twitter. I want you to go over those. I didn't see how many. Did you get up to three of those? Is that your keys?
I think it actually ended up to being five, and I'm trying to remember what all they were. The first one is, I can't remember what order I have. I'm just going to riff off the top of my head here. Offensive rebounding is one. I think that the Jazz got too many offensive rebounds in game two. The Jazz are good enough on first attempt, and you can't give that team second or third attempt. So it's going to be a long night for you. And I think personnel-wise, I mean, it might be tough, but I think they just have to do a better job of gang rebounding. The guards have to get in there and get rebounds. There were times where Utah just wanted more. I think there was one possession there late in the game. I just remember they got like four offensive rebounds. I remember Royce O'Neal got one to be just throwing the ball in off the sideline, was going out. I mean, it was just pure hustle on their part. And again, with Rudy Gobert in there, it's going to be tough. But I think collectively as a unit, the Grizzlies have to do a better job of team rebounding. Because again, you can't give that team second or third opportunities, because a good team like that, they're going to burn you if you give them multiple opportunities. And that's what we saw in that, especially in that run there late in the game. The bench has to be better. You get outscored 43-14. I mean, that's tough to overcome. You get outscored 43-14 off the bench, and then you get outscored plus 33 in three-pointers. I mean, those are two huge deficits that you're not going to have as much success. But you look at the personnel. I mean, Grayson, you didn't score. And again, maybe we need to see a shakeup there. Maybe if Grayson's going to shoot the way he shoots, not give you anything offensively, defensive matchup, Winslow would definitely be better. I mean, he's bigger, brings more lit. And even though he struggled offensively in his time with the Grizzlies this late in the season, his defense, he was really good on defense. And you got guys like Bogdanovich and Royce O'Neal and these type of guys. I think he matches up with them really well. So I wouldn't mind seeing Taylor Jenkins deploy him a little bit. Maybe BC, see what he can do in the pick and roll. I think we definitely see that here in these two games in Memphis. I think he'll be back in a rotation in some capacity. But the bench has to be better. You can't get outscored by the 43-14 off the bench. That's just not going to cut it. I talked about Jaren a little bit. We've discussed that about going inside more and exploiting some of those mismatches. I think that's something that we have to see. You can't give up 19 threes. I mean, they're going to hit threes, but the Grizzlies have to be – you look at game one, and even though I think the Jazz outshot them for three, it has to be a closer margin than that. You can't be minus 33 from the three-point line. Just Jazz team's going to make threes. You're not going to completely shut them down, but it has to be better, and I think that kind of goes with the pick and roll. However they decide to fix that or deploy that, I think that'll go a long ways in fixing that. And other than that, I mean, I think those are kind of the big things that they have to look at going into game three and four again. I mean, I don't know if they can totally fix these things, but they got to be better than they were in game two. And we saw those things better in game one. And coming home, I think it's going to be a big advantage. I think they're going to feed off the crowd. Hopefully the Jazz role players don't play as well as they did in game two. And I'm confident, man, in this team. And I feel like they're confident in coming home. I feel really good, especially about tomorrow night. We'll see about game four, what happens there. But I feel like the Grizzlies come out, and I think they get a win on tomorrow night. I feel really good about that.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me on the threes, you know, maybe they can make 19 threes, but the 50% from three is the biggest deal. They got a lot of really good looks from three, yeah, is why they knocked down so many. Taylor Jenkins was talking in the I can't remember if it was pregame or postgame, but he's talking to one of the pressers, and he talked about the Jazz defensively being very disciplined, and their guys don't overhelp. Part of that is because they know they've got Rudy Gobert back there as a backdrop, yeah, and he can kind of lock that down. But some of that, you know, some of that is discipline. They've got to know, hey, stay in this spot, because if you drift off too far, this guy's going to knock down the three. And you could see guys, you know, Royce O'Neal, he was a guy that he was 4 for 6 from three. And it seemed like a lot of his threes were wide open looks of where guys were sliding over to help and they didn't get back. They couldn't close out on him. Joe Ingles, I think he was a leader in the second half of the season from three. As far as percentage wise, he was 3 for 3. You've got to be disruptive to these guys. You can't let them have wide open looks. And I know for a fact there were a couple, at least 3 or 4 times when guys were sliding in to help and they just lost track of their man. And then the ball gets swung over there and boom, you know, the guy's wide open and you're 17, 18 feet away. You're not going to close that in enough time before he gets that shot off. So all good points. Game 3 back at the Forum on Saturday. Going to be a big one. I don't know. I think, what's it going to be? Is it like around 10 or 11,000? Is that about
10,000.
So yeah, it's about 10,000. You know, when I was there for the play-in game against San Antonio.
7,500, I think, for that one.
And there was noise. There was energy. You can feel it from the fans. So, you know, you're looking 3,000 to 4,000 more people. I think that's going to be huge for the Grizzlies. If you're going to the game, have fun, enjoy it. Make sure you're bringing the energy. They're going to need it, man. I want them to feel this home court advantage, and I would love to be there. Unfortunately, work just can't, but I will be at game 4 100% for sure.
Yeah, and to kind of go back to that point, I think one obvious remedy to the 3-point shooters, the Grizz, is make threes themselves. I mean, you're minus 11 on the 3-point line. If they make 19, make 14. I mean, I think they're capable of doing that. We've seen this team shoot really well. So, I mean, that's obvious, really. I mean, this Grizzlies are not a good 3-point shooting team, but you're coming home, you're in the playoffs, maybe they outshoot their 34-35% average on the season. And that's a way they can remedy that. But again, you can't lose by that much on the line, whether it's you making threes yourself or doing better in the pick and roll defense. 33 points, man, that's just a lot to give up. And if they're beating you by 33 points on a 3-point line, it's going to be hard for you to beat them.
Yeah, and the one place where the Grizzlies generally make up that deficit is in the paint. And in this game, I think the Grizzlies did outscore them.
Let me see what they got.
The Grizzlies had 62 in the paint.
62-58.
Yeah, so, you know, you can make that up sometimes, but against a team that plays pick and roll this well, you're not going to outscore them by 33 points in the paint. Like that,
no.
I don't think at any point in this series the Grizzlies will outscore the Jazz by even 20 in the paint. I don't think that is going to happen just because of how well Mike Conley and even Donovan Mitchell, now that he is back, they've got some guys that play the pick and roll very well. And so we'll see, man. I'm excited. I didn't think the Grizzlies could win this series before the series started. Now, after seeing these first two games, I do have belief that they can do it. They're going to have to take care of business at home, though. That is 100% for sure. If they, I feel like they got to win both of them here if they want a chance to win this series, man. So you can get the show on, but well, I'm trying to close this out. You got anything else before we go, man?
No, man, just agree with you there. I think if they're going to win this series, I don't think if they end up splitting these two games, I think it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to have to go to Utah to win either a game 6 or a game 5 or a game 7. I mean, that's going to be tough. I think if they're going to win, they got to take care of business at home, and we'll see. But I think confidence-wise, I think they proved a lot to me in that third quarter after getting down, I think, 22 points to be able to battle back the way they did and still be in the game with the way Utah played, because I don't know if Utah's going to play a better game than they played on Wednesday night. And for you to still be in that game, despite foul trouble from DB and Jonas Valanciunas, to still be in that game, I think that proved to me that they can play with this team even when they're playing really well. And I think being at home, I think that kind of changes this thing. So we'll see. I mean, I think if they're going to win the series, they got to win both of these. And if they get both of these, man, go back to Utah 3-1. We'll see what happens. But I'm excited about the opportunity for them, and it should be fun.
There is one more thing that it is semi but not really Grizz related that I wanted to talk about. And that is the crap that's going on with fans. Popcorn on Westbrook, the dude in New York City that spit on Trae Young, and apparently, I didn't see this until today. I don't know when it came out, but apparently 3 fans in Utah got banned because of some stuff that they were saying to Ja's family. I'm going to tell you this, right? I've talked about stuff like this. I think I want to say it was either last year or 2 years ago. Marcus Smart, he went out of bounds after a ball, and they were in Denver or somewhere.
Yeah.
And the guy made a terrible. It was something like "Stay where you belong" or some crap like that. These guys are grown ass men. Because of their job, they're not allowed to respond. Yeah. Like they can say stuff, but they're not really allowed to respond the way that they would respond.
No way. They would say this stuff and to them outside on the street. Like, there's no way.
If somebody came to a game with me and done that shit, Russ wouldn't have to worry about it. Like they're getting smoked, dude. I am 100% confident that there's not a single person that I hang around that is that stupid.
Man, I wanted to let him go. I was like, let him go, man. I was like, because I mean, it's ridiculous, man. I mean,
you cannot do that. You can't. So like, I wouldn't tolerate it at all, man. If somebody in my section is doing something like that, like they're getting called out 100%. Like I'm standing up, I'm pointing at like security guard. If I can stop them before they do something like that, I'm going to stop them, but they're not going to get to hide. And I don't think that those guys did, but the popcorn was bad enough, but spitting on somebody.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
bro, I'm going to tell you like,
it's so out of bounds, man.
There's a lot of people out there that can probably whoop my ass. If they spit on me, we're going to find out. Like yeah. I can promise you that I ain't going to whoop everybody out there. I ain't the baddest man on the planet, but if you spit on me, we're about to find out who can whip who. I can promise you. And that's like fans have to do better. If you're at a game and you see somebody trying to do that, squash it, holler at a security guard. Like these people are cowards. The guy that dumped the popcorn on Westbrook, like cowers straight back to, he leans over and dumps the popcorn and then slides back right back into his seat to try and act like he didn't do it. Like that. It's trash, man. Complete trash. So as fans, do better. If you see somebody trying to be ignorant, or if you hear somebody saying something, point them out, put them on blast, because we don't need people like that at the games, man.
Yeah. Like, I tweeted out. I tweeted out yesterday, and I was saying that athletics is the only thing where people feel like they can say and do anything to, like these people aren't human beings or something like stuff that you would, there's no way you would do that outside on the street. If you saw Russell Westbrook, you're not dumping popcorn on his head outside the street. You know how that's going to turn out. So, you're a coward, man. And it's idiot. Well, these are just idiots. Like you got to spit on a guy. I mean, it's not that serious. I mean, we're passionate about our teams and dislike certain guys on the floor. But, I mean, that's out of bounds, man. You're just going too far. I mean, I saw someone on Twitter the other day was saying, like, after that game that they hope the Jazz plane crashed. And I was like, man, are you serious, man? I'm like,
that's either, man.
Crazy stuff, man. I'm like, it's not that serious. I understand that you don't like Rudy Gobert and you don't like what's going on in this game. But, man, you, like, want these guys to die. I mean, that's, like, crazy stuff, man. I think this fan is sort of a fanatic, and a lot of times people take that seriously. And you see some idiotic stuff out there people say and do, and it's just got to stop. Fans got to be better, man. That's the bottom line.
End of the day, man, regardless of how much money these guys are making, there's not enough money in this world for it to be okay for somebody to say whatever they want to say to you. You know, the guy that wanted a Frosty from Wendy's that was, you know, cussing Isaiah Thomas and all, like, dude, it's not okay to say that stuff. And people have to know that. And that's, you know, some people just aren't raised right and they're that stupid. But for those of us that know right and wrong, if you're in the stands and I'm not encouraging you to go up and fight anybody or nothing like that, but the fans have to police this stuff, man. Security, you know, for when it's full, I think FedEx Forum is like 18,000, 19,000. And, you know, you've got what, probably maybe 70, 80 security guards or something like that working in there. They're not going to hear everything. They're not going to see everything. You got to get people like this away from the game, man. They idiots that are going to say and do stuff like that don't deserve to be in there watching it.
No, I mean, and I was saying yesterday, it's kind of funny, it came on the hill of the popcorn thing. Yesterday, the courts, I think, in Utah denied the case of the fans. Where Russ got into it with the husband and wife, I think, a couple years ago, back in 2019 in Utah. That came to a head yesterday where the courts denied their claim. I mean, they were trying to sue Russell Westbrook and the Jazz. Like, how are you trying to sue Russell Westbrook and the Jazz? Like, I didn't
when
get
this
to, I had to read. I had to read it twice to make sure I wasn't reading it wrong.
Yeah, and the guy was talking about Russ's family. This is like, if I remember that right, like, I don't remember all of the stories, but, you know, like, you can talk crap about somebody's game and they're going to take it. Like,
yeah, but
I've been at games when guys, like, you know, fans will be talking crap to Chris Paul about his shot or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, he'll kind of jaw back with them a little bit. And that's all, like, there's a line. And if you don't know where that line is, keep your damn mouth shut. Don't say anything. If you don't know where the line is, just don't talk trash.
So, yeah, man. But you can't talk about it, get anybody's family again. Yeah. That's out of bounds. You crossed that line when you start anything other than what's going on in the basketball court. You cross the line. You say anything personal about even them. It's bad enough. But their family is definitely out of bounds. I mean, so you just can't do it. I mean, and idiots know this. I mean, they know what they're doing, and it's sad. But again, man, they got to clean this stuff up, and it's just, you just hate to see it. And we have a couple incidents here recently, man. And hopefully, we don't hear much more about any of this stuff as the playoffs go on.
Yeah, I hope the NBA does something to help remedy this. But we will get out of here now. I keep saying that, but well, you can get the show on Twitter at HoopBallGrizz. I'm at DWill2111. We will be back with another post game after game 3. Isaac, let them know where they can find you and get us out of here, man.
Yeah, man. You can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals. Again, we'll be back for a post game after game 3. Make sure you go over and follow at HoopBallGrizz. Man, go out, man. Go out to the game. Get out to FedEx Forum and support this team. They're going to need that energy. Utah crowd really brought it out there at Vivint Smart Home Arena. So we're going to need the same kind of injury at FedEx Forum. I know it's only 10,000. I know a lot of people complain about that, man, but fill all 10,000 of those seats, man, and give this team a boost. I mean, this team deserves it after the way they played. I mean, to even be here in this position, I mean, no, I don't think a lot of people felt like they'd be here. I mean, you just look at what they've done. I mean, even just going back in game to the Golden State game, once they blew that lead, when it went to overtime, how many people really believed that they were going to win that game at that point? Most people thought, oh, here we go. Steph's going to win this game. This team persevered. They got one on the road. So, man, come on and help this team get 2 victories. And other than that, man, that's all I got. We'll talk to you sometime after game 3. Until then, go Grizz.
This has been a Hoop Bowl presentation.